Buccaneers fans, here he is, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. Mid-June, Ira's got his tan in full force. He's svelte. No, he's not, but he is the sage of Tampa Bay sports. The Baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, the King of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the Custodian of Canton. The podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford and Ira, the 2023s. You can start ordering them right now. GM Sean Sullivan has put the word out. The 2023s you can order, no deposit, and he's going to give you $500 to do it. Incredible. BillCurryFord.com. Reach out directly if you want to. You can handle it completely on email, you know, online. Reach out to Sean Sullivan. Tell him what you're looking for. You don't even have to come into the dealership if you don't want to. Bill Curry Ford, nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. 62 years in Tampa. The Curry family name is on the dealership, BillCurryFord.com. And we love Big Storm Beer, Ira. I was out there at the tap rooms the other night. Big Storm Brewery has tap rooms in Odessa off State Road 54 in Clearwater, the flagship location. Beautiful outdoor seating, live music. Follow them on social media at Big Storm Brewery. Location, Odessa, Clearwater, Cape Coral, Orlando at the Amway Center. And Florida's Elite Restoration. That's your first phone call. Anytime you have any sort of disaster in your home, fire, mold, storm damage, flood, of course, Florida'sElitereStoration.com. We'll hear more about all of them later. Sage, this is part two of Todd Bowles, the interview, the exclusive interview with the Ira Kaufman podcast. A lot of great feedback on the first segment of it, Ira. The coach was fantastic. Anybody can go back and find that episode at Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts. You've now broken 1,400 subscribers, Iris, specifically at the Podcast Addict app, which I believe is more than double than anybody in the Tampa Bay area. So good for you there. You finally clipped the 1,400 mark. And Podbean, wherever, it's there. And it's, of course, it's at joebucksfan.com. Today is part two, Ira. And we're going to get to that soon. But first, how are you?
I'm doing well. Steve, I might be slipping here because I think I used to have 1,400 subscribers on the Galapagos Islands. I don't know what's happened there. But I'm like everybody else at Buck Nation. I'm waiting for an announcement on Rob Gronkowski. Lee, I think we're going to get one by the end of July. We shall see. Lee, something it's hit home the last couple of days. You know, we talk about the heat, the humidity in this great community that we live in. But my son is spending the summer in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska, which I believe is the site of the College World Series, I think.
Yes.
And I think that's where the great Bob Gibson was born. I think he went to Creighton University. Anyway.
Yes.
You know, I check the weather all the time because my son's there for 3 or 4 months. And it was a very comfortable 77 degrees last week. And I checked it today, and it's 103. Now,
Midwest.
Yeah, Lee, you grew up in the Midwest. You know what the heck's going on. I just saw some reports from Chicago, people dunking themselves in Lake Michigan. Now, Lee, you got to correct me on this. I thought the announcer made a mistake. She said some people, after they jogged, they ran into Lake Michigan. Lee, she said the water temperature was 53 degrees. Is that possible?
You know, it's still June. A couple weeks ago, it was still cold. Yeah, I believe it was about 53 degrees. I remember one time that I grew up near the second biggest lake in Illinois. The biggest lake, of course, is Lake Michigan. I grew up 3 miles from the second biggest lake, Carlisle Lake. And I remember going swimming on Memorial Day weekend, and it's like, holy smokes, it was cold. And that's when I was used to cold weather. That's not like now.
Ira, what's going on? Ira, I feel like I should say, and now we're going to go to Stephanie Abrams and Jim Cantore in South Florida. What the hell? You give me a Nebraska weather report to start the podcast?
Steve, I'm a Renaissance man, Stevie. I'm a Renaissance man. There's other things besides Buck football. Hard to believe.
Is your son getting used to tornado warnings?
There's no beach to cool off in Omaha, Nebraska. Steve, I know you want to get to the Bucks. You want to get the Bowles. I thought it was fantastic. I'm not going to say what happened at the end of that podcast, Steve, because I'm not going to give it away. But you can't have a better ending those last 10 seconds of that podcast. So our listeners got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, that's going to be in part three, the closing of the trilogy of Todd Bowles. Today is part two. And Ira, before we get into some of the chatter about the podcast itself, because we didn't talk about the Bowles interview, and we'll talk about a couple of things in part one. And then after part two runs here, we'll chatter a little bit more about some of the things that he said. But I wanted to run past you, Ira. You know, Lee wrote something about the pass defense, the run defense, and sort of that balance between the run defense and the pass defense and the stats. You know, Michael Lombardi talking about how the Bucs had the best run defense in the league last year, which they did not. You know, so the passing numbers were horrible because teams didn't want to run on them, which is debatable. You know, they were about 13th in the league in yards per carry against. They were also like maybe 10th in the league, despite having the fewest attempts against them. They were like 10th in the league in runs allowed of 20 plus yards. The short yardage runs, they were maybe 7th or 8th in the league as far as in touchdowns allowed on the ground. So it was kind of a mixed bag, not the greatness that we saw, historic greatness that we saw in 2019 and 2020. You know, so it's an interesting balance there and where things need to improve. What's your take on that balance and how much are the Bucs valuing the run like they used to, run defense, with some of the offseason changes that they made?
Lee, I think what the Bucs have done their last 3 years under Bowles with their defense, and Bowles is out front. You know, everybody says, we're going to stop the run first, make them one-dimensional. Well, Bowles takes it to an extreme, Lee. Some of that we don't like. But the fact is, Lee, teams don't run on the Bucs anymore. I mean, it's the reputation. It's what they do on the field and their reputation. And that's why they face the fewest rushing attempts, Lee, and conversely, the most passing attempts. So you gotta put it in context. Yeah, they give up touchdown passes. Yeah, they give up yards. But, Lee, you know I'm big on this metric, average yards per pass attempt. And Coach Rapone said something at the podium a month or two ago, and I believe he's right about it. Steve questioned it. I believe they are third in the league in fewest yards allowed per pass attempt. So that tells you they're doing a good job. Now, look, can they stop Cooper Kupp? No, they can't, Lee. Can they beat the Saints and stop Kamara with those swing passes? They're struggling. But, Lee, overall, it's a pretty good defense. And last year, I don't think, was as good as the championship year. But, Lee, let's remember, the injuries to the secondary, and you've said it many times, you couldn't be more right, Jason Pierre-Paul was a shell of himself, Lee. He was. And they really didn't have anybody that they trusted to take his spot. So they kept dragging him out there. He was okay, decent against the run. And Lee, to be kind, zero factor on the pass rush. Yet he was still out there a lot on third down. So, you know, we'll see. That's where Joe Tryon comes in. That's where Logan Hall comes in. We will see. But Lee, this is a pretty good defense. They've got good players like Winfield, Shaq Barrett, Vita Vea, Lavonte David. They've got good players, Carlton Davis. And I don't think Bowles is going to be running around from room to room to the extent where he's not going to focus on the defense like he should.
I heard something even more interesting than what Michael Lombardi said. He strongly insinuated that the pass numbers against the Bucs defense was inflated. And then he said, he goes, well, that's because no one will run on it. Mike Tanner of Football Outsiders had a little more nuanced take. He said, number one, the Bucs played the Falcons, and the Falcons were abysmal, and they had no running game, none, zero. That's part of it. And Tanner also added, the Bucs with such a good offense, teams had to pass on them. You know, they were behind, they were playing catch up, so they had to pass. They didn't have the time on the clock to run the ball.
You know, Steve, our listeners will hear Todd Bowles say, if they haven't already, Steve, talking about what really frustrates Bowles is tackling and inconsistent tackling Steve, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he said in some games he thought the tackling was awful. Awful.
Folks are going to hear that from Bowles coming up, and then we'll hit that on the...
I don't, Steve, my point is that the one thing that the Bucs were very good at defensively, besides defending the run, Lee, is that teams didn't go deep on the Buck defense. They didn't. Now, a guy could have finished with 310 yards, but a lot of it is yards after catch. Lee, in the category of completions, 40 yards or more, 17 games during the regular season, I think the Bucs only gave up 5. That's a very low number, 5 completions of 40 yards or more. Of course, the one in the playoffs that proved decisive was, I believe, a little more than 40 yards to Mr. Kupp. But, Lee, it wasn't like Buck secondary was getting beat deep. It was a little more nuanced than that.
Yeah, and I know Bucks fans get mad at me for saying this, but it wasn't like the Bucks got burned by pick some no-name receiver. I mean, Cooper Kupp was burning everybody, the Bucks. He was burning everybody. You've heard me before. I thought he was the MVP. You take him off that team, the Rams are a non-factor in the playoffs. Like a team getting killed in the playoffs, not getting killed, but getting burned by Jerry Rice. Now, I'm not comparing the two, but I'm just saying you get burned by Jerry Rice, well, you know, it happens. And that's the way I think of Cooper Kupp, the way he played last year. You know, he burned a lot of teams, not just the Bucks. Now you could argue, why didn't they put 2 or 3 people on him? Why didn't they make sure he didn't get off the line of scrimmage? That's a completely different, although valid argument. But, you know, getting burned by Cooper Kupp, it's not like we need to, just tear apart the defense and start from scratch.
And Steve, along those lines, remember when Michael Thomas of the Saints was healthy, and he's a noted Buck killer. There's no question about it. But Steve, you know, one of those years he caught 150 passes. So 150, not 105. So he was killing everybody along the same lines that Lee's talking about. Yeah, they're getting beat, but these guys are elite, elite receivers.
There's a lot of ways to look at last year's defense, a lot of ways to analyze it. And of course, they had their ups and downs in that December game, just going to Lee's point about the Falcons. In that December game of the Falcons, I just looked it up. The Falcons ran 23 times for 121 yards and a touchdown. They ran all over the Bucs, and they have a horrible running game. So it's almost a, and they dominated time of possession. They lost the game. They had turnovers, but it was closer than it should have been. And, you know, it just speaks to the wacky year the Bucs had defensively, most of that due to injuries. But Sage, what fans have heard before we get to Todd Bowles today, what they have already heard is Bowles answering your question on Devin White and sort of the state of Devin White. He gave quite an address on White, and I'll give you one quote here, but you guys can share your overall thoughts on what Bowles said. He said, quote, "I think it's impossible to ask an inside backer to have 9 sacks every year. That's not realistic. He got through in 2020 and had some success at that, but we had a lot of guys up front that helped out with that. But if he can get 4 or 5 sacks and get about 3 or 4 interceptions, that's a great year to me, as well as doing things, helping us win, making some 3rd and short stops, leading the defense, and being where he needs to be mentally." Bowles went on to say they tweaked some things for Devin White, and the coaches have to be smarter in how they use him, and he is the natural-born leader. It's not for show. You know, and he said some other stuff too. Your overall thoughts, Ira, on Todd Bowles going into Devin White?
I think Todd Bowles was very realistic in terms of the sack number. The problem with Devin White, Lee, is that he set the bar too high in 2020. Bowles been around this game a long time. He played defensive back in the National Football League and won a Super Bowl. He knows that 9 sacks from an inside linebacker, that's rare. It's rare territory. I'm okay with 4 or 5. I agree with him. But he rushed 133 times and only had 3.5 sacks. Lee, I don't like that ratio. I don't like it. What I thought was interesting, Lee, when he really talked in depth about Devin White, Lee, is it seemed like he burdened White with some leadership responsibilities. Lee, it was a little murky. He didn't really explain it, but he talked about, you know, asking him to be an enhanced leader. And Lee, somehow, perhaps that takes him away from making those splash plays. But he admits, Lee, I think he admits that he did not have the same season as 2020. Didn't have a bad season, but he hasn't lost any faith in Devin White and thinks he's going to have a big year. Lee, 9 sacks, any Buck fan that's looking for that, that's not reasonable.
You made a great point about the, you know, he said maybe a too high of a bar for himself. What we remember of White, at least what I remember, is not so much the 9 sacks. I remember him going absolutely wild in the playoffs. He was Ray Lewis-like. He was Derrick Brooks-like. He took over a game, literally and figuratively. Those 3 games, when the 2021 season came around, our last memory, my last memory at least, of White was this guy was a completely different level than everybody else. He didn't come close to that. So I think we have it in our mind, at least I have it in my mind, that he may be overrated because he set the bar so high in the playoffs, the 2020 playoffs and the Super Bowl. And Football Outsiders, they were talking about the Bucs' run defense. They were very down on White, very down. They all but said he's overrated. You know, they said, well, he's not the player we thought he was. And, you know, he might as well get used to it. He's just a player. But I think they fell into the trap, sort of like I fell into it. They saw what he did in the playoffs. They expected that to continue like I did in 2021 and wasn't even close. So White looked like a mortal because he played like a superhero in the playoffs.
You know, you make an interesting point, Lee. Steve, maybe we're too fixated on the sack total because I think White's slippage last year was in his tackling, 4 angles. Out of position, and his coverage. So let's skip over the 9 sack and the 3.5 sack stuff and focus where it squarely belongs. He was part of the tackling problems of the Bucs last year, and his coverage, I think, dropped off from his late 2020 level.
I'm not going to disagree with you, Ira. He wasn't the player that he was previously, and Bowles thinks they've made the tweaks. And I was just most encouraged by the fact that Bowles told us White came back and he made various adjustments to his game. It's obvious that he's made corrections and that his attitude is right and that he's hungry and just that he's, you know, in the little bit they've seen in the spring, he seems poised for a great year. Because I don't think Bowles would have stroked us. He didn't have to go there. Nobody asked him, do you think he's going to have a great year? So I'm just pleased that they saw what they saw. The biggest thing, and I've mentioned it before, and there's really nothing to say because the number is the number, how a guy like Devin White goes through a whole season without a forced fumble. He's only got one in the last two regular seasons. He had more as a rookie. It's hard to believe. Maybe that speaks to a lot of things with his tackling. He's an excellent player, but we need to see that greatness because that's like what Lee said, that essentially helped the Bucs win a Super Bowl. Sage, let's...
Steve, let's remember he's still a young player. He is a young player.
Absolutely. Ira, for your listeners and for JoeBucksFan.com readers, there is $500 off any services from Florida's Elite Restoration if they have a disaster in their home or at their business, but that's only if they use Florida's Elite Restoration services after their free assessment, after they consult the experts there at Florida's Elite Restoration, whether it be a fire or mold or flood in their home. So what a great opportunity to knock some money off your deductible if you're using insurance or just if you're paying cash for some sort of mold remediation or a cleanup of a situation. Just mention it before you use Florida's Elite Restoration. If you buy their services, and owner Josh Martin, 14 years as an insurance adjuster in the industry, he knows all sides of it. Just let him know that you heard it from Ira and from Joe Bucks fan, and they're going to take care of us Bucks fans out there who have a problem in their home this summer. This is the season for it.
What's the number one thing you're looking for when you're going to make a call about possible mold, possible water damage? You're looking for honesty. That's what you're looking for. And you're going to get that from Josh Martin. And remember, the consultation is free. Let them come out. You've got Josh Martin and his people. He's hired a great staff. And you're going to get $500 off any project that ensues. Florida's Elite Restoration should be your first phone call before your insurance company. First call.
Florida'sElitereStoration.com. All right, Ira. You put the hammer down on Coach Bowles here on that tackling that you speak of. And that's where we pick up the interview. So let's turn it over to the Sage with a great opening here to Todd Bowles. Let's turn it over to the Sage, Coach Bowles, and then we'll be back on the other side.
Now, Todd, I'm going to generate a little frown here because I'm going to mention a word that you're not happy with. I don't think you're happy with. And it's not a specific player, although White's part of it. Tackling. Todd, you've talked about it throughout last season, a little bit the year before. What's going on there? Is it poor angles? Is it as bad as some Buck fans are screaming about? Is it erratic? What's your feelings about the tackling overall?
Overall, I thought it was average. I thought we can get a lot better tackling. We weren't very good, especially in the second half of the season. Some games I thought it was terrible. And if you look at it, the ball's not going over our heads. When we give up 300-yard games, we give up a 5-yard check down that turns into a 15-yard play or a 2-yard pass that turns into a 12-yard play.
And they accumulate.
Or vice versa, and they accumulate. Now you think the guys are killing us down the field, and they're not. These are check downs, and we got to tackle better. Our angles have got to be better. Part of it is just discipline. For the most part, is discipline. You're not in pads as much anymore. You got to either tackle donuts or dummies or those type of things, but it's got to be an emphasis on tackling. We need more guys swarming to the football to help out with the tackling. I thought we dropped our heads way too much last year, and without saying particular names, I thought we dropped our heads at times, and I thought we missed tackles, and that is the biggest pet peeve of mine, tackling.
You know, Todd, Ryan and Neil, to an extent, can be contributors.
They've been
in that regard.
They've been very good tacklers in their career, and hopefully that helps us, and we can't wait to get them in there.
This is a great subject. You're singing my song here, Wayne. Here you want to have better tackling. I this is both a sore subject and a great subject for me. You know, I don't want to out the guy, but he's an ex-quarterback, ex-NFL quarterback. He has a national radio show. He thinks tackling overall in the NFL has deteriorated. And he tried to say the lack of wrapping up is on purpose. Players don't like to wrap up because it creates shoulder injuries. Is that guy full of it, or is there something to it?
No, I think if you tackle the wrong way, it creates shoulder injuries. Right now, the tackling is, you know, you can't go high because mm-hmm. you can't go above the neck. Now it's almost to the point where you can't go low, and you're trying to find the perfect form tackle. I think you just have to play football. You want to tackle the right way. And 90% of tackling is wanting to, and then the rest of it is technique. You know, if you have your leverage and your feet under you, you're going to make a tackle. You know, we have to understand when we can hit people and when we have to just get them to the ground. As a safety, you know, if a guy pops through the hole scot-free and he's running full speed at you and you're flat-footed and he already has the first down, 3 or 4 extra yards isn't going to hurt, so you're not going to make the big hit. Just get him down so we can line up and live the next play. You're not going to go up to him and blow him up, so to speak. Yeah. You know, I think my second year, we played Dallas, and Herschel Walker popped through the hole so quick, and I was standing there flat-footed. I said, you got to be kidding me. And I knew he was going to run me over, but in the process, I knew I could grab his legs in the midst of him trampling me, but I got him down. That's the biggest thing you have to do is get him down. So we have to know when to get people down and when we can hit people. But the biggest thing is we got to react quicker, and we got to go there with the intent of having that guy get down no matter what it costs.
I got an Akeem Hicks story for you. I just want your feedback on this, your reactions. Earlier this week when he spoke, he said something I thought was really cool. He was asked about the defense's new teammates, what he thinks about him. And I thought this is very insightful. He said, I heard a lot of chirping. And he said, usually when there's chirping, players are getting on each other. But they were receiving the chirping. They were listening. It was like guys wanted their teammates to be better, and those teammates were listening to what the other guy was saying. And he said, that's generally a sign of a winning culture.
So it wasn't a negative type of situation.
No, we talk a lot. You know, a lot of it led by Nacho at times. Devin can talk and get pretty chirpy. Some of the coaches as well. Mike will have his say. Evan's on offense. And Tom can get going. It's really just competing against each other. We know we're competing, but at the same time, we're all teammates. Mm-hmm. So you have – there's a lot of talking on Sundays. There's a lot of talking on Sundays. And the biggest thing is, when we get out of it, can you talk and still play your game at the same time? If you can't, shut the hell up and don't say nothing and just do your job. If you can, it helps the other guys too. You know, we don't condone it, but we're not against it either. We like to have confident players. We want to let them be themselves out there on the field, but they have to understand that we're on the same team, and they do that. It's not personal.
Even Brooks told me he talked a lot of trash. Derek Brooks with that, you know, reputation, Todd, but he backed it up, Todd.
That's the biggest thing. You have to back it up.
Coach Akeem Hicks, you said the other day, I had to rewind it three times. So I was like, Todd Bowles said he's going to play a lot. We expect him to do what he did in Chicago, and would seem like a big statement. You didn't say, hey, he's got to fit in and learn the system. So has he been a player you've been looking at for years? Do you have a history with him? Maybe you scouted him. Maybe you always had an eye on him. What's the backstory there?
He's a guy that I've watched on Sundays, you know, when the Bears were on TV. Every time I see him, he's been in the backfield. You know, you watch certain games and he's making plays in the backfield. He's not just a big guy. He can move, and he's highly intelligent for a defensive lineman that knows as far as understanding pass rush technique and how the guy's going to go down and block and how he can get his hands up under his wrist. And he can do a lot of things that way. But when I got fired from the Jets and I was debating whether to come down here or go to Chicago, you know, they had a couple of guys from the Bears called me and try to get me to go to Chicago. So, you know, I had a brief encounter there, but it wasn't long. And I've always been a fan of his. And, you know, he kind of fits everything that we want in a defensive lineman. He's big. He can get off the ball. He can move. He plays with a mean streak. And, you know, we expect that coming from him right here. As far as how much he's going to play, you know, we're going to keep our guys pretty fresh. As a D lineman, you want to have two group rotations. You don't know if you're going to get no huddle, if you're going to have a long drive. Those guys can't stay in there like DBs, but he's going to play for us, and he's going to play a lot.
Bruce Arians always used to say, I don't want to coach the coaches anymore. That's why I came back, because I know all my guys are coming back. I don't want to have meetings. I don't want to coach coaches, train them. What's your stance on coaching coaches as you look toward the future of being in this job, hopefully 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years? Do you have a different view, and are you starting to plant those seeds of beyond this year, or are you just all about this year?
No, you always try to plant it beyond this year. I was a young coach once, and I had a lot of guys that helped mentor me. You always want to help coaches get better. You always want to try to help them be leaders and stand in front of the room. I don't want to be the only voice in front of the room. I want to be the main voice. Obviously, the cue comes from me, but at the same time, you understand coaches, certain techniques they do, what they can get better at, what they're not good at, and you try to help them that way when you can. Sometimes it's just a simple comment saying, you know, this guy, he looks better over here when he does this, this, and this, and then you get the comment from him, and you try to help him out that way. Other guys you talk to, and you get your message across, but you still have to, like I said, we've been together 3 years. All of these guys have confidence and all great coaches. And you probably got a potentially 4 or 5 more head coaches on this staff, you know, if given the opportunity. But you coach the coaches really for your message, for your message. If you can get your message across to the coaches, they're in the rooms with these guys every day. Individually and collectively as groups, they're in the room with these guys every day. If you coach your coaches and the message is coming from the top down from everybody and you're all on one accord, you don't have a problem.
I'm always trying to coach Ira, but he never listens. But
Todd, last two from me, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this. We won't see you till training camp, which is going to be what date for reporting?
July 20th.
July 20th? He said
for
you got to have
reporting.
You got to have
for
6
the
weeks.
Vets will be for 23rd. 26.
Brady mentioned the 23rd.
Yes.
So
I'm talking about for coaches to be back in the office.
But what about reporting day for players?
26 is the players. 23rd is quarterbacks.
What do you want, a physical, Ira? What is this?
Now, Todd, I'm going to tell you up front, and you know this. This is a pet peeve of mine.
So
it's sensitive, I know, from your standpoint, but
All right, we're cutting it off there. A little bit of a cliffhanger. Part three of Todd Bowles on the Ira Kaufman podcast will be next week. It's going to run the entire interview with part three on the end. So if you didn't go back and catch up on the great part one, which is 20 minutes, you can catch it all next week. But go ahead back to the platforms or at joebucksfan.com if you did not listen to part one. We got some more coming up here on the podcast. Going to dive into some things, some behind the scenes stuff. And I want to remind everybody that wherever you buy craft beer, you're probably going to find Bromosa, the tangerine IPA from Big Storm. That's because of all their great beers, that is the top seller, and it's the top seller for a reason. The Bromosa Tangerine IPA, it is fantastic. Fantastic in the gorgeous orange can. Get to BigStormBrewery.com to see all their beers and their tap rooms. Amazing food, a truly great menu. They've improved it. BigStormBrewery.com, tap rooms in Clearwater on 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton Road, in Odessa, off State Road 54, Cape Coral, Amway Center at Orlando, open 7 days a week, coming soon to Ybor City, BigStormBrewery.com. All right, Ira, some fascinating stuff there. Let me go back to the tackling, because that's the first thing the folks heard from Todd Bowles. And, you know, he had some very firm things to say. You know, he said it was terrible at times, and, you know, that overall it was average. But I thought most interesting and probably the most controversial thing that Bowles said was that tackling, which we've heard before, but in this context, it's sort of controversial. Bowles said that tackling is 90% want to and very much about discipline. And yet the Bucks tackling wasn't good. So is he sort of saying that my unit didn't want it enough and wasn't very disciplined, and now he's the head coach, and guys like Mike Tannenbaum's out there, you know, part of the Parcells clan, is trying to sell on ESPN how disciplined Todd Bowles is and how this team's going to have less penalties and be more disciplined. And we've talked about, you know, sort of in past podcasts a couple of times, the whole Parcells guys all sticking up for each other. But the tackling talk from Bowles was interesting. What were your biggest takeaways there? And Ira, do you think that's a bit of a problem, as much as he admits that the tackling wasn't where it should have been and the guys, in Bowles' words, weren't disciplined or wanted it enough?
I think he meant, Lee, that their focus would wander from time to time. That's unacceptable for Bowles. I'll give you an example, one of the most egregious examples of the last 3 years during the Arians-Bowles regime. The Jets game was a joke, Lee. That game was a joke.
Yeah.
And
I remember other things than you do, but okay.
You know, that's the Antonio Brown game. Can you imagine them losing to the Jets, Lee? I mean, can you imagine? The disparity in talent is absolutely enormous. They didn't tackle worth a damn that day. The Jets got a punchless offense. They were driving up and down the field on the Bucs. Disgraceful performance. Ate at Bowles. He probably didn't even feel good after they won the game with his players. Interestingly, did you get the same impression that when I asked Bowles about tackling, Lee, he never really talked about tackling in the run defense game? His total focus was on how, you know, those 7 yard hitches are all of a sudden 15 yards. That's what he was talking about. He never said anything about the tackling on rush defense. So I think he was okay with that. What jumped out at him, you talk about Cooper Kupp, Lee, there's nobody better. He led the league in yard after catch, not by accident. That's a guy you gotta wrap up. And Lee, I think part of the problem, and Bowles mentioned it in passing, this is more than should be mentioned in passing, they didn't swarm to the ball, Lee, like they should, like they used to under Kiffin. Now, look, they have Hall of Fame defenders, but this is a damn good defense in terms of talent. Lee, if the first guy misses the tackle, the next guy is supposed to pick him up.
And Wade Phillips always said it doesn't cost anything to hustle. And that's what gang tackling is. It's hustling. It's no more complex than that. Oddly enough, Ira, right before you and Steve called me for this podcast, I was literally texting this to Sean Sullivan as the phone is ringing. Can't remember the guy's name, Gabriel something. I can't remember that first name or last name. Wide receiver with the Bills. Bucks had him, and I'm not going to out the player, but the Bucks had this guy dead to right on fourth down on the Bills' final drive of regulation. They had him stopped 3 yards behind the chains, would have been fourth down, would have been change of possession, Bucks take over, Bucks win. And this son of a gun dragged the Bucks defender 3 yards downfield, just enough for a first down. Because instead of trying to tackle him like he should, this guy jumped on his back like he's trying to bareback a horse.
Yards after catch was a big problem for the Bucks last year.
Yeah, that's an interesting nuance, Ira, that Bowles seem to be talking about, like you said, yards after catch, not just pure run defense, tackling and run fits. And, you know, usually that's something that would come out of a guy's mouth like Bowles there when he's talking about that. But that seems to be the emphasis. And I think Lee should out the guy. I mean, what are we doing here if we're not naming names?
Oh, we got lax in the locker room this year. I don't want the guy going after me. I want information. You know, I don't want to kill the guy for one play. And then when I ask him a question, F you, you ripped me on your podcast for one tackle. Okay, point taken.
All right, Sage, what else? What else got your mind working when you listened to the Bowles early on in that interview? What hit you first?
I'll tell you what hit me, Steve. Him talking about those 4 years with the Jets, the first time around as a head coach for Bowles. Couple of points he made, Steve, that I think are important going into round two for Bowles. He thought he knew what to expect, Steve, but reality hit him hard in New York. Example, and he mentioned it. He thought he could handle the media. He thought it wasn't going to be a big deal, the media obligations, and in particular, the New York media. And in the end, Steve, he wasn't ready for it. He was overwhelmed by it. He didn't say that, but that's the message I got. He also thought he could handle all the responsibilities, and as a result, he said, "You're putting fires out all the time." Steve, he tried to put out all the fires. You can't do that. So how does that apply to the Bucks in 2022? Steve, he's going to have to delegate to his coaches. The good news is he knows all these guys. It's not the same situation as when he was coaching the Jets. He knows all these guys. He says he will delegate. He says he will manage the coaches, not coach the coaches. We shall see, but I think that's the smart way to go. And I think those are some of the painful lessons that he learned during his four mostly forgettable years with the Jets.
The media angle is interesting to me, Ira, aside from the fact that we are media, and most people just don't give a damn, and I get that. But the reason why it was interesting to me that he went there is I remember after Schiano's first year with the Bucks, I think it might have been Jenna Lane, but Schiano was asked, what was your biggest surprise coaching the NFL? What was your biggest surprise? And he was an assistant coach of the Bears once upon a time, so it wasn't like he didn't have experience in the NFL. And he said the media obligations. He said it was overwhelming, and he never dreamed it would be like that. And it took so much time and so much things that it took away from his football. And then Bowles basically said the same thing. So I just thought, maybe selfish, I just thought that was interesting that I heard Schiano say the same thing. Now, I'm not comparing Schiano to Bowles, don't get me wrong, but I've heard that before from other coaches that they never expected or dreamed how much time and obligation that is.
Steve, I understand what Lee was saying. Maybe I'm reading too much into what Bowles said to us, Steve, but I thought beyond just the sheer volume and the weight of the media obligations, and you got that in all 32 teams, Steve, I thought maybe he referenced or suggested that the New York market in particular proved it was a revelation to Bowles in terms of how much interest there is in the New York football teams and the edge that the media has in the Big Apple.
He was very specific to New York. I think he said something like, you know, nothing could prepare you for that. And it was an interesting angle from him because obviously he played in the league, so he understands the media from that perspective. He mentioned to us, it might have been off the recording, I don't remember, because we did talk to him off the record, but he mentioned conversations that he had with Bill Parcells before he took the job. He was a Parcells disciple, And of course, he was around Bruce Arians, and I'm sure Arians, who was a media friendly guy and did a lot of interviews, you know, Bowles got to learn from that. And I'm sure Arians probably had some suggestions for him, but it went over the top apparently with what he dealt with in New York. And, you know, one could say he was actually dragged around by the New York media, kind of like Sean Murphy Bunting got dragged around by the Bills. But, you know, it was an interesting take, and I think he should feel extra confident that he knows that it's not going to happen here in Tampa. It's going to be softball city compared to what was going on in New York, and he's obviously experienced now, so that should make it even easier. And, you know, he's coming into a team that's phenomenal. So, you know, as long as he does his job, he knows it'll be all right.
Steve, what about the point of not trying to overcoach, not trying to be everywhere, let somebody else handle that? I got enough on my plate. That could prove to be a meaningful difference the second time around for Bowles. I think he learned what he can't do during that New York tenure.
I don't know. Anything else stand out for you guys? We'll hit more topics from Bowles Chatter in the next podcast this week. And remind everybody to shop at BillCurryFord.com. BillCurryFord.com. Sean Sullivan, our draft guru, host of the Best in Class podcast, is waiting for you. Lee, Ira, anything else hit you really hard?
Steve, I'll throw this out. And you got to give me credit, Steve, because I talk about it all the time with the three of us. And then all of a sudden we're in front of Todd Bowles and I'm not going to mention it. No, that's not going to happen, Lee. Not with me. I looked him in the eye and I said, Blaine Gabbert? Really? Steve, were you surprised I brought that up, Steve?
Not at all. Ira, you had to get it off your chest. And, you know, unfortunately, fans weren't able to see his face when that question hit, because we were kind of laughing, you know, while you were delivering it. And, you know, what's he going to say? Blaine Gabbert, of course, he's comfortable winning with Blaine Gabbert, but he didn't go over the top like Arians did.
Yeah, but like, what was he supposed to say? Oh, freaking Jason Light stuck me with the SOB. What am I going to do? You know, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, you could be talking about Brady. You could be talking about Levante David. They could be talking about Wirfs. You could talk about Evans. Talking about Gronk. All the people you can talk about. Freaking Blaine Gabbert? Come on.
He sticks in my crook over there, Lee. Now,
he's a non-factor.
I know. He better be. He better be.
Well, here's something I need your feedback on, Ira. Steve wrote a story about this. I wrote a story about this. Steve alluded to this subject briefly earlier in this recording. I'm going to hit you right between the eyes with this, Ira. I listen to Michael Lombardi's podcast all the time because I think it's informative, it's interesting, and it's entertaining. So I love it. I think he does a hell of a job with it. Now, he hasn't come out and said Bruce Arians is a joke, but the way he talks about Bruce Arians, you can tell there's not a whole lot of respect there. I mean, he gives him credit where credit's due, but, you know, it's almost like Lombardi scoffs. It's like, oh, he's got to make time for his glass of bourbon during the day. Or, you know, he thinks of Arians sort of like a cartoon character. Lombardi loves Bowles. Well, Lombardi's a Parcells guy by proxy. Bowles is a Parcells guy. Tannenbaum's a Parcells guy. Tannenbaum obviously went on ESPN and said the Bucks will be so much better. Ira, when have you seen a coach take over a team in 2 years, win a Super Bowl? They went from moribund, absolutely moribund team, to a Super Bowl champion in 2 years. He retires, and a guy gets on TV and said the Bucks are better off without him. When have you ever heard that?
Lee, you're bringing up a very sore subject with me, because I read the same columns and hear the same comments that you do. And maybe this is a little bit of an exaggeration. Steve, you can slap me down a little here, but it's almost like it's open season on Bruce Arians. That's the way it looks to me. Everybody's trying to weigh in. He was a figurehead. He didn't do anything. He's in a golf cart. He didn't do the X's and O's. They won without him. Bowles is going to be a major improvement. Steve, the guy won a Super Bowl within 2 years. He built a hell of a staff. He turned around a really bad organization in Arizona immediately. His first year there, they won 10 games. His third year, they're in the NFC title game. That's Bruce Arians. He didn't have Tom Brady. Maybe this happens all the time, human nature. The guy's gone. You kick him. I know a couple of writers that have made a habit of doing that in their career with various people. As soon as they leave the team that they cover, boy, they can't wait to kick them to the curb. Steve, not now it's happening to the former head coach of the Bucks. I don't think it's fair.
Could it be the Parcells guys, especially, you know, they mock Arians. You know, he's out of the office by five. He's got to have his bourbon, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think they're jealous of Arians in a sense that Arians has demonstrated you don't have to pull a Joe Gibbs and live in your office, that you can get a job done and win games and win a Super Bowl when it's notorious that the Parcells guys, the Belichick guys, they're working 16, 18 hours a day.
You're right, Lee. And there was a guy in this town that proved that, 25 years ago by the name of Tony Dungy. Lee brings up the Bill Parcells clique, you know, with all his minions. Steve, I got the perfect answer for any Bill Parcells disciple that wants to take a pot shot at Bruce Arians. You ready, Steve? Here it goes. I just thought of this. One of Parcells' great quotes. Lee talks about it all the time. You are what your record says you are. Arians' record is damn good.
Yep. Dyer's perfect.
Oh, yeah. I mean, historically, his record's fantastic. And, you know, the irony of what those guys were talking about with bashing Arians, you had Phil Simms is in the midst. He's finishing up his top 40 annual quarterback breakdown.
Chris Simms.
Yeah, Chris Simms doing his annual top 40 quarterback breakdown. He's in the middle of that, and he gets to Tom Brady, who he put at number 8, and he, you know, goes into a ton of detail why. And in this breakdown, he explains that Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich got Brady to break out of his shell and to sort of change his game, and that they coached him up very well in the sense of changing his mentality, and they deserve a ton of credit for that. And Simms isn't just blubbering that. I mean, he legitimately was. Most people don't realize. He was an assistant coach with the Patriots for a year. He spent a year around Brady and understands his game completely and the offense that he came from and the one he went to. So, you know, the fact that, you know, I take that much as much more credible than these guys just claiming, oh, you know, Arians is a clown show. Bucks will do better with Bowles. They might. But Bowles has a lot to prove, and he knows that. I mean, I think we learned from Bowles that he's definitely a realist. You know, when I asked him about his background, and he really dove into, you know, how he got into the league, and he almost wasn't supposed to, and people told him his injury, you know, just coach Todd, and he talked about winning the job and then winning the safety job, where on his defense, his initial defense in the NFL, that was the Mike linebacker would be today. I mean, he was calling all the shots, all the plays, and he became a coach on the field, and it got him into coaching. I mean, he knows you got to earn it, and he's got a lot to prove this year. All the heat in the world is going to be on him, but you know he's got a fresh start here, Iron. I think he knows it.
Last year at some point, Brady was asked about, you know, playing for Arians. What'd you learn? You know, how'd you adjust? Things of that nature. And he said, I learned there were different ways you can win games.
Nice. Lee, I want to make one point about Bowles, and I'm interested whether you two guys share this insight into him. Look, we sat down, you know, for almost 45 minutes with him. Nobody else interrupted. I've never seen him more relaxed, Lee. So here's the point I want to make.
Yeah.
My takeaway, Lee, in terms of his personality, he knows who he is, and he's very comfortable in his own skin. Lee, that's not true of every Buck coach that's come down the pike, and I think that's hurt some of them in the long run. Without a big ego, Lee, he kind of likes himself in terms of his values. He's going to stick with them, and I think he's got a very solid character, Lee. I don't think he's going to be easily shaken.
No, because of his experience with the Jets and in New York. And you know, we're sitting here mocking Tannenbaum and to a lesser degree, Lombardi for, you know, slurping Todd Bowles. I want to be bluntly honest here. I want to be on the record. I want everybody to know. I hope Tannenbaum's right, because that means the Bucks are going to win 2 Super Bowls with Bowles.
absolutely right. But he hasn't proven anything as an NFL head coach.
Well, we'll see it. That's what it's all about. He should be confident. He's a fifth-year head coach with Tom Brady as his quarterback. He's made a fortune of money in his career. He's been how many, you know, decades and decades and decades in the NFL. And I got the same impression, Ira. He's confident, supremely confident, not over the top, not cocky, but he believes in himself. Nothing's going to rattle him, I don't think. You know, he's seen a lot in his time, and I think it bodes well, but he's got to prove it. And there's a lot, the team's on a 22-5 run, and that was the previous coach. So, you know, we'll see. Sage, I will have a lot more to talk about the Bulls interview. I've got to holding some points back, and of course, part three will be coming up. So later this week, we'll get more into some specific subjects. You can shoot the Sage if you want to, a question or two at iKaufman76 on Twitter. He's always up for an answer. If he doesn't know the answer, he'll tell you when the Rolling Stones put out their third album or whatever he tweets about. And we remind everybody that Big Storm Beer, that is the beer, Florida's best craft beer, bigstormbrewery.com. Great food, great beer. And we heard that great offer from Florida's Elite Restoration, floridaselite-restoration.com. Put it in your favorites, bookmark it. It's the time of year where you need to know who to call when you have a disaster in your business or your home, somebody you can trust. And of course, the guru, the man himself, Sean Sullivan, is waiting for your email or your phone call, BillCurryFord.com. He will help you personally. Ira, say goodbye, and we'll be back later this week.
All right, Steve, and let's go out on this note. Let's acknowledge the accomplishments of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Gentlemen, they're going for a three-peat. That would be a hell of an accomplishment.
Oh, of course. I mean, when's the last time it happened? Islanders?
There's early 80s. Islanders. That's right.
And Ira, I think it's also fair to mention, I don't think you would mind. I mean, we had a basketball discussion with Coach Bowles, and he swore to us the Celtics were going to win. I just lost $10,000 the other night.
I got to say, I thought he was right. I thought the Celtics were going to win too. What the hell do I know?
What better way to end this podcast with you saying, what the hell do I know?